Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tobin and I are talking about some interesting experiences we've each had in the last week. And maybe you can relate, and maybe you can lend a hand and give me some advice. It's all coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twrt. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack and Chris Tobin here today. I'm Kirk. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance, coming to you live, if you're watching live, from the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, which is really in my office. But Telos Alliance sponsors the studio, and we're glad to have them along for that ride. And they're also my employer. So if we give some examples of technologies or equipment, and if I talk about the Telos Alliance with a certain degree of authority, yep, that's because I'm on their payroll. That I've been for about 19 years. I'm coming up on 19 years there. Hey, and my co-host is Chris Tobin. I never know where he is. I think he's in a studio somewhere that he commandeered in New Jersey. Chris, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Oh, well, we're live. Gotta go. Why, thank you, Chris. It's good to see you again. Yes. I'm just having some fun.
You are a busy man.
I'm in a small booth, having a good time. Yep. No, all's good. Just
you
a
were
crazy week.
You were extra busy last week because you weren't on the show.
Was that last week? Or was that the week before?
Or was it week before?
Oh, man, I lost track. That was week before, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, you were super busy one week and you weren't on the show.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think it was. Oh, goodness. What was it we were doing?
I don't know.
It was one of these last minute. It was a video shoot. That was it. Yeah. We had a last minute video shoot come along, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I guess I got to do the camera work. So, yeah, that's last minute. That's what that was.
And this does not happen infrequently. Now, you usually are able to squeeze in the show between different responsibilities, but you've talked to us before about all the video that the station you're engineering for is doing. And even in a previous job you had with a large New York City broadcaster, they were producing a lot of video too. In fact, the radio station you're telling me was producing more local live video every day than the TV station.
Yes. That's correct. That's correct.
Simply Christmas.
When you think about it, there are some TV stations, the only part that's live, if you will, are the newscasts or sports casts, if they have it. Everything else is usually a network feed of a pre-recorded program. So, yeah, we were producing a lot of stuff. It's pretty funny when you think of it that way.
So this episode, Chris and I actually have been talking since we couldn't get Craig. Craig Kopcho was going to be our guest today and had some technical difficulties, couldn't get him on. And Chris and I have some other things to talk about anyway. And this is the kind of show where we could really use your feedback on some of the experiences that we have, at least for me. I'm speaking for me, because coming up after the break here, I'm going to tell you about going to a cluster of radio stations in Mississippi that I haven't been to for a year. And I'm supposed to be the director of engineering. So, I kind of felt bad about that. My full-time job with the folks at Telos keeping me pretty busy, and I haven't had time to go down there. So we've had a few, interns do a few things. My business partner, the president of the company, has done a few technical things too. And a lot of it we've handled by remote control, but there's some things you just can't handle by remote control. So, I ran into a few interesting problems, fixed most of them, got a couple things hanging loose, and maybe we can get some advice. Chris can certainly give some advice. And hey, if you'd like to participate, you can, if you're watching this on Facebook Live, whether live or whether you're watching a replay of the show on your own time, you can comment on Facebook. It's really easy to comment and maybe give me some advice on what I experienced last week. Chris has good advice, but he doesn't know everything either, just like I don't. So that's coming up. Chris has got a story or two to tell from last week. Chris, you want to preface that for a sec?
Oh, well, yeah, it's just know your transmission system when you're working with a TV or radio. Know the components of the transmission system when you call out to somebody for help to troubleshoot a problem when your transmitter's forward power is, say, 200 watts and reflected is about 50 watts. You have to start to say to yourself, there is something wrong at the antenna, or is it the transmitter, or is it in between? And there's a good story with this one. We were befuddled. A friend of mine called me up. We're network analyzer. We got all kinds of things plugged into the cable, and we're seeing stuff that makes no sense. And we're going, there's something else on this line that we're not aware of. And the radio station management, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say individuals, insist, no, everything is, it's an antenna, it's a cable, it's this. And then as I continue to ask questions, it got to be interesting.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to talk about that, my problems, and hey, maybe we talk about your problems too, coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. And we're going to take our first break, be right back with some interesting stories from last week, some things that got solved, and some things maybe I could use your help on. So that's coming up right after this from CalRec.
CalRec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I/O gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot, CalRec, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Go to calrec.com/twert. Hey, studio guests are only human, and humans, you know, they cough and sniff and clear their throats, even on the air. You can cure this with the Angry Audio Guest Gizmo. Press the cough button, mute the mic. Every guest needs one. You know what else they need? Headphones, which is why each Guest Gizmo also has a studio quality headphone amp with individual volume control. Anything else? Well, you've seen those mic arms that have those gorgeous built-in LED tallies. They're beautiful, but how do you light them up? Guest Gizmo does that too, illuminating the red light whenever that mic is hot. And installing the Guest Gizmo in your studio's furniture couldn't be any easier. You just need a 2¾-inch hole saw and a steady hand. No router required. Nothing fancy. Your studio, though, gets a clean, custom appearance, and you get all the credit. Check out the Guest Gizmo and all the other cool gadgets at angryaudio.com. That's angryaudio.com. This is some cool stuff. You can even go, and I'm serious, you got to go to that website and check out what they got. They will help you build a beautiful studio and even turn, you know, a little Behringer console into a workable console for a little guest room or recording room with tally lights and, you know, on-air stuff and mic muting and all that. AngryAudio.com. Just talking to the proprietor there today. And says things are going really well. Got good response. Okay, Kirk Harnack and Chris Tobin here. And it's Kirk and Chris talking about what we did in the last couple of weeks. So, Chris, I am officially the VP of engineering for a little group of stations in Mississippi called Delta Radio LLC. And I think we're up to 10 radio stations now. Yes, all bought on credit cards by my business partner. And haven't been there in a year. And that means there are some things that that really needed help. And, you know, one of the really sad things that we discovered is there seems to be, at least for us in that area, a lack of freaking common sense. So here's what I mean, Chris. We've got a virtualization server. And I'm not sure if my IT guy has the backup one completely done yet. We've got a virtualization server that we run a number of radio stations out of, and it runs several other functions as well, like automatic recording, FTP, slicing and dicing files and getting them prepped to go on air. And the server has, of course, two power supplies. It's got, I don't know, 17 fans in there, and it's got all rated hard drives plus an external network attached storage. And it's got two power supplies in it. And, we had some kind of electrical problem, and the local electric contractor came by and said that we were drawing too much current from some outlet Turns out we weren't. I don't know why they said that, but they did. And they ended up replugging the server into different outlets. And then we started having problems. A couple times at 4 in the morning, the server would just quit and then come back up. And long story short, we went to look at the server while I was there doing some other things. And neither of the two power supplies was plugged into one of the several UPSs we have. And we have some big honking UPSs. Both were plugged in to different commercial power outlets. No UPS. This is our main server that three quarters of our stations there depend upon. It boils down to if you want something done right, you just have to do it yourself. Chris, I was just flabbergasted. And this was a professional company that does commercial and home, electrical work, the electrical contractor. And there's the UPS. It's 5 rack units tall. It's in the bottom of each of 3 racks. There's the identical UPS in each of 3 racks. And these are the 3,000 watters. These are good size. I mean, they're not little, things from Staples. And yet they thought it'd be okay just to plug these into commercial outlets. Chris, I'm shaking my head. What do you think?
Well, that's in the short answer, that's the world we live in. I will tell you, back in 1997 or 98, I was having a lunch in a park in Manhattan. It was near Columbus Circle, near the ABC studios, with a gentleman who was telling me he was doing voice work, contract work. He was an announcer, a DJ, very famous, popular DJ in New York City, but I'll leave the name out. And we were having lunch with a friend of mine who does voiceover work, and we were just talking about freelancing at radio stations. I said, so, how's it going with that work you do? And you do a syndicated music show, the countdown show, you do this. And he goes, well, let me tell you something. I'm very nervous. The future is going to be very strange. I said, why is that? He goes, this attitude of just good enough is becoming annoying, because now we've got owners who just good enough to hire a kid out of school or in school and board ops the show, misses the spots, misses this, can't cue time, doesn't understand the back timing, or doesn't. He goes, I just don't see the future looking good. Fast forward to today, and I can tell you that I've come across many people that claim to be specialists, that's the word they use with me, in the field of various things, and we'll say in this case broadcast technology, and I too am befuddled by, you do know that in this room there are 6 outlets, 3 of which are orange, and the other 3 are brown, or non-orange, and the orange usually indicates 2 things. One, it's an isolated circuit of some kind, and most likely a genset backup power. It's not just standard utility. Okay. And I to this day still have people plugging in mission critical equipment into the brown outlets to find out that when we lose power, we switch the generator, which we do once every couple of months for load testing. I find a lot of things suddenly going offline. And I'm like, how does this happen? I mean, I don't understand this. This room was built by, and we had people install. Same thing. These are folks that are supposed to know this stuff. I don't know what's gotten into people. Nobody's, studying stuff, reading things, taking it seriously, and it's just become a mess. And just recently, literally 4 days ago, I was working on a dehydrator at a transmitter site, checking on a problem with the cutout switch. It wasn't turning off after the pressure built up, so it kept running. It's supposed to stop. And next to me were 2 other people that happened to be up there. It's a multi-station site. And there were 2 people from a group of, let's just say, folks that are required to do the work on the tower because that's just the way it is. They're specialists. And they're looking at me and they go, oh, so what does this do? And I'm like, what does this do? You have no idea. You install transmission lines and work on RF and you don't know what this is doing and what this manifold is in front of you. Okay. So I go to explain to them that this is the dry air dryer for the transmission lines, the 6-inch lines going up the tower and stuff. And as we pressurize the line. Why do you pressurize the line? In the back of my mind, I don't say this verbally. I'm just saying it in my brain. Let me get this straight. I can't do this work on the tower because of certain restrictions, labor related. And you're telling me you don't know what a pressurized line is for. I felt like saying, do you understand what the concept of dielectrics are? Well, maybe not. So I couldn't even give you an answer as to why you can hire a company that does this for a living. And you're sitting there going, you do see these. Well, hey, you know what? I take that back. Yes, there was a TV station, low power TV station. 2 years ago, I did some work for an emergency call. I got an emergency call, went to the site, And they had this huge six-rack UPS system. And for some reason, they had some contractors up there, broadcast contractors. I don't know who they were. I didn't even recognize the name. I was like, I don't know which part of the country they're from. And it managed to plug in their remote control exciter for the TV transmitter and some other parts into the non-UPS protected power strip, even though it was quite clearly labeled. And when the building did a power test, because they had to do this every quarter, they normally would switch to UPS. I mean, sorry, switch. They would be on UPS. The generator would kick in. Nobody, no interruption.
Sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, they pulled the plug, switched the generator, and the transmitter went down because everything in the rack that was utility went offline. And I got up there. Geez. I'm looking at this going, okay, what am I missing? I had to contact the owner. I said, who was up here? Who moved the outlets? And they're like,
yeah,
we contracted a company to do this installation of the new, was it? Oh, yeah, they installed a Metro Ethernet circuit to bring in video from their studios in L.A. So they were bringing IP video in. So the guys worked in the racks and had to make some moves and do stuff. And I was like, okay. So I'm telling you, I know there's people watching and listening to us right now going, oh, this is crazy. You're prejudiced. I'm like, no, I'm not. I mean, I don't know everything there is to know about certain things, but I can tell you one thing. I have a pretty good idea what electrical codes require, and I have a pretty good idea when I see an orange outlet with a green triangle on it. Okay, this means something special. I should be taking note.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm saying this because I've been in hospitals. I've done work in broadcasts, you know, on outside broadcasts in places where I need a power connection. You know, if you're a TV crew, how many of you plugged in that HMI power supply and blew a breaker? You know what I'm talking about. I've got TV crews that come here to the radio station to do documentaries with us, and I have to clearly tell them, do not use the orange outlets, please. Just plug into the brown, because the orange outlets here are on UPS / generator circuits, and I don't need to be overloading that circuit when we switch the generator. And I get the befuddled look from the lighting guy. He looks at me like, oh, is that what that means? I'm like, really? You're killing me. You know, I don't know. I'm so used to working years ago with directors and producers of shows, both radio and TV, where they understood just enough about the technical side to be able to walk into a studio or control room and go, hey, guys, you notice that audio doesn't sound right? That microphone, he's off mic. Somebody check it out, please. Today, I have yet to come across anybody that can do that anymore. That's just me.
Yeah. 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 And so, boy, yeah, this conversation, we could go in a whole different direction on this that I don't want to go. And that is that and actually Craig Kopcho, our guest that couldn't join in with us, was going to talk about a lot of these same things. You know, one of the things that Craig told me in the pre-show, when we were talking about the topics, was that you've got to be a jack of all trades, and you've got to know something. I mean, actually know something about a lot of different trades. You're almost like a general contractor if you're the chief engineer, the director of engineering for a broadcaster. You've got to know, you've got to be able to tell, is this generator getting installed correctly? Is this working the way it should? Is this working as well as it's supposed to? And a lot of this seems, you know, to us like such common sense. If you've got a server or other mission critical things that are the few things that are required, hey, you could have, you know, some of your satellite receivers could go off the air because you only use them once an hour. You know, they could get powered down and you might miss a newscast. Of course, if you have a satellite receiver or two that's providing you most of your news talk programming, well, you'll want those on the UPS. But my goodness, a server to unplug it from a UPS and plug it into, you know, a couple outlets on the wall, I just don't get. Now, Chris, I'm going to switch gears on you here because I had a great experience last week. Actually, I had a lot of great experiences, but one of them was installing a new transmitter. Now, the plumbing was already there. This was for a station that, gosh, it's a long story because we had a terrible storm. It pulled a bunch of coax off the tower. We had to replace the coax. We didn't have the money, so we had to use a smaller gauge of coax that would still handle the power, but it had more loss, and the extra loss meant we weren't putting out the licensed ERP because our transmitter wouldn't do any more TPO, transmitter power output. And so the long-term solution has been actually to just get a bigger transmitter, because we needed that more than we needed to replace the coax back to 1 5/8". So all that said, we've been installing, when we could afford them, we've been installing, brand new rack mounted Nautel transmitters, and we've been delighted with them. We've got one or two kilowatt models and a couple of 2.5 kilowatt models, and we've been delighted with them. We needed a power level that we honestly couldn't afford in the Nautel line, But the guys over at Alinos had one that was the right power level for us. We needed like 4 kilowatts, and Alinos had a 5 kilowatt model, and it was very affordable. So I never used an Alinos before. You know, they're kind of funky looking with their graphical design on the front. They are actually the weird thing is, and I'm just going to use Nautel as the example, and I'm not picking on them in any way. I love the transmitters. In fact, I had dinner the other night with Jeff Welton from Nautel and Mike Patton as well. But the Alinos was like no heavier, maybe even a bit lighter than the Nautel. And the Alinos was literally double the power level, almost double the power level of the Nautel. So we put that in. We ended up moving the Nautel down the street. We own a tower down the street, another radio station. And that station had a fire a few months ago. It's just been a disaster. And the tower lighting controller caught on fire. But we've been on very low power there. The Nautel was going to get us up to about half the power we need to be until we take delivery of a used transmitter that we bought that'll put us back at full power. Anyway, putting the Alinos in, it went really well. And I was pretty delighted with the whole thing. But I got to tell you, Chris, the Alinos 5-kilowatt rack mount transmitter and the Nautel it replaced was a 2.5-kilowatt, which would really go to 2.8 rack mount transmitter. They both have that irritating thing called the interlock. And I wish that these transmitters would just come with a plug that went in there that just took care of it. I don't recall either one. I don't recall if the Nautel did, but I know the Alinos didn't. And of course, the manual for the Alinos, the quick start guide and the manual, neither one of them looked anything like the back of the transmitter. They were different. They had made changes. And so we ended up, you know, piddling around for quite a while to try to find out why is this transfer not coming on. I can think it's got to have an interlock, an external interlock jumper somewhere. And turns out that between my business partner, Larry Fuss, not showing me a bag of parts that came with the transmitter. Gee, Larry, that would have been helpful. Right. And Gary Klein was also in town. He was there for a conference that we were all at. Gary Klein, you know, the man for whatever reason, Alinos makes the manual hard to get at online. But Gary has a friend and they got together on the phone real quick and got the manual. Transmitter manufacturers, what could there possibly be so secret in your manual that you have to keep it a hidden secret? Please don't do that. Anyway, we got the manual, and the manual didn't match the transmitter either. Not quite. It was close. But between all that stuff and the bag of parts that Larry Fuss said, oh, yeah, I found this bag of parts. Yeah, that has exactly what we need. So we put these various dongles and things on the back of the transmitter that were pre-wired to have the interlock closed. Great. Now the transfer would come on. But I got to tell you, it looks like, I don't like to say negative things about anybody, but my goodness, why does it look like such a kludge? It's like the engineers thought, well, if we do this little 25-pin dongle and add a thing, drill a hole in the side and have a wire coming out, and that goes to another little thing, it literally goes to another little thing, and all this just hangs off the back, and one of these plugs into another plug on the back of the transmitter, then the interlock will work. My goodness, it looks like a real afterthought. And but anyway, all that made it work, and it came right up to the power level we set. It was 4 kilowatts, and I was so impressed that a box, the 4 rack units tall, and I don't know, about 24, 26 inches deep, would put out 5 kilowatts. Well, we're running it at 4 of FM power, and it was just amazing. Chris, have you tried any of these compact solid state transmitters?
Yes, actually, I've helped install 2 or 3 of them, and they're pretty handy dandy. But you know, the difference between the manufacturers and the reason why you don't get the manual is because their RF is different. See, Nautel RF is different than Alinos, BE, Continental, Rolls Royce. They're all different RF. That's what it is. So that's why you have to have this special dongle on the back with a pinhole, and then a greenie that comes with the transmitter, because the greenie is just used to press the reset button. That's what.
I'm mad now. I was taking a drink of water. I was taking a drink of water, and you made me spit the water out on my desk. Good gosh.
The only reason I only said that because I got into that conversation with somebody once at a transmitter site about a month or two ago, and he's like, I don't understand what's going on. And I just looked at him. I said, well, the reason the combiner is having this problem is because the RF from that transmitter is different than the other one. And he looks at me like, Really? Because they're two different manufacturer brands. I'm like, that's what it is. I said, you know, it's like a Chevy and a Ford. What do you got? Two different things. I said, they both have combustion engines, but they're different. He goes, well, that's true. They are, aren't they? I'm like, oh, God, this conversation's going the wrong way. And I had to stop him. I'm like, no, like, I'm only kidding. The reason you're having a problem with the combiner is there's tuning problem here. The cavity's not properly tuned. That's what the problem is. The return loss is wrong. Oh, okay. I'm like, oh, wow, that was a good one. So I just thought I'd bring it back, you know, the special RF. You know, you had dinner with Jeff Weldon. He would have told you that. He probably, you know, he explained the differences. Special RF. You know? Oh,
well, despite that bit of difficulty, I got to tell you, I was really, you know, the Elanos doesn't have that gorgeous AUI display that the Nautel has that shows you all these cool things. There's some things that it doesn't have, but we needed that much power and we needed to spend the amount of money that it cost. And so we ended up doing that. So now we have yet another brand of transmitter in our stable, which is, interesting. I was delighted.
All in all, but nowadays solid state transmitters tend to be a little more reliable than the tube. So you could actually have a mixed bag in the stable and still get away with it.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I don't know how serviceable the Elanos is. I don't know if, you know, when I'm going to need to service it. We've had great service from the Nautels. We have had, I think, two RF pallet failures in one of the Nautels, but the transmitter may have been stressed, who knows, by some power line surges and things like that. Because it was just, you know, none of the other Nautels gave any trouble, but had one that needed two pallets replaced over time. Yeah. And it was real. And after the 58 screws came out, the pallet replacement was relatively easy. Just a little bit of soldering and unsoldering. So anyway, I wanted to pass that experience along. Good experience with the Elanos, but you know, if you're installing the transmitter with somebody else, communicate. We're in that business. If there's extra parts in the box, tell the other person about it because they may be important.
Yep, been there, done that. I've had that happen many times. Yep. They're like installing something, going, you know, something's missing here. Are you sure? I'm pretty sure something's missing. And then it's someone in the back of the room. Well, what's in this bag? I'm like, oh, gosh, are you kidding me? Yeah, I've seen that. But, you know, the thing is, nowadays, yes, you got to be a jack of all trades. I don't know, when I got into the business, you know, some 30 years ago, I was told by my mentor, he said, look, You may be electronics, you understand this is your passion, you're enjoying the RF and transmitters and studios and working this stuff. You need to learn the other parts of the business as well. And I'm like, what? He goes, you need to learn the other parts of the business. And if you don't, you will never be able to understand why things are what they are. So I say this, I know on many episodes I reintroduce this statement, but those of you out there that are getting in, or that have just started and maybe a couple of years into enjoying broadcast engineering, learn the other parts of the business so that you can have your mind is more open to when you're putting in the transmitter and you say, you know what, this back of the panel looks kind of missing or sparse. There's got to be something else around here. And you'll be open-minded looking that way. Or you're in the studio with your morning host and you're getting all these wacky requests, and on the surface, logically, because engineers or techies, nerds, whatever you want to call ourselves, we tend to have a very linear looking at approach to stuff and everything has to follow a certain method. In creative world production, and they don't do that. That the creative mind doesn't have a linear line. It's literally all over the place. So you need to work in that realm and understand it. And I've worked with many morning show, afternoon, midday talent where some of the requests they came up with was definitely out of left field for things that you would say, this doesn't make any sense. But then once you walk a mile in their shoes and say, I get it, then you become a hero and you're like, okay, now I get it. And then when you start planning and building studios and other things, you start to look at it from that perspective. And you know, as we had Lee Harris on some time back and we talked about the studios that I helped design there that he uses every day and stuff. And a lot of that was because I sat with the anchors and just, okay, what's the easiest way to do this? Where do you feel the most comfort? Because you're using it's the most repetitive stuff going on. So, you know, these are things you got to think about. And yes, jack of all trades, absolutely. It's a positive. It's not a negative. So anybody that says it's a negative, it's wrong. The more you understand, the more you're able to talk to a program director on their level, you'll find it much easier to get things accomplished. And it brings me to what I was talking to a friend of mine who got a call to help design a broadcast continuity plan for a broadcaster. And he was like, I have no idea what to tell these guys. I was like, what? I said, let's talk to them. Let me talk to the non-engineering people, because they're the ones who are going to be responsible for when things go wrong, because, you know, master control operators. Thankfully, I was able to explain and talk to the programming folks, and they say, okay, you're doing this, you're doing sports. We have this high-profile soccer game we do every week, and we got to make sure there's a lot of money on the line. And I started asking questions like, well, when your sports folks from the field at the stadium dial in on the IP codec, are they given two IP addresses to try in case one doesn't work and there's a second one? No. Do you have two two separate physical boxes back at master control they could dial into? Yes. Okay. That's one thing. Okay. Now, when they call in, is there somebody who can respond by looking at a computer that's dedicated to just as a utility computer for the GUI interface on, in this case, the console, which happens to be an Axia console, and also the codecs that they're dialing into? No. Okay, you got to change that. After all that conversation, then I came up with a plan and said, here's what you need to consider. And then, you know, several months later, I got a call saying, wow, thankfully it worked because you were right. They couldn't connect on one of the units because we apparently had a box that got unplugged. So the other codec was plugged in. They connected. They called master control. We're here in queue. Okay, great. Let's go. So think of these things through. You know, think about it. Walk through the steps. And say, okay, if I got a guy in, because I know friends of mine here in the city that they have remotes going on, they have things going on, they got remote folks that call up in a panic, like, I don't know what's going on, something's wrong, and they're going, did you do this? No, why not? What do you mean? This is what's in the book. Oh, and then all of a sudden it's working. You can't assume anything. Even when I work with folks, we're doing videos here at the station, there are times when we're doing stuff and somebody goes, well, you know, what if we do this? I said, whoa, don't step in that area. That's where we're going to be shooting the video. Put the cabling over here. Think about what we're doing here. Think it's through. Do not just, you know, when I used to do a lot of freelance stage work, you know, stagehand work, it was fascinating the number of things stagehands would do by throwing cables on the floor, across the stage, and doing this, running around, and plugging things in. I'm like, do you have any sense of purpose as to why you're doing it this way? What do you mean? Because I don't know what that cable goes to at the other end of the stage. And then it becomes this, let's unplug until we hear the microphone not work. I was like, guys, this, you can't.
Oh, gee.
So, you know, these kinds of things, you just got to think it through. And I know it's not easy, but it's important.
And I'll go back to
one of those things.
I'll go back to my statement earlier, which is that chief engineers, directors of engineering, need to be a lot like a general contractor and have a handle on everything going on. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit about this device right here. Oh, you can't see it so well. It's too well lit up. Anyway, it was inexpensive and they're getting cheaper and cheaper. Well, it's about here. I'll give you another clue. You can see what that is. So we'll talk about that and see if there's some interesting uses that we can put that to. It's not just, well, I'll tell you about it in a minute. I think you know what it is, but we'll tell you about it. Plus, adventures on the roof coming up and, adventures with deciding, you know, we just need to network this and be done with it. That's all coming up. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, episode 445, is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store. Am I going to talk some more?
This is the Henry Engineering Sportscaster?
Yeah, it is. The Henry Engineering. Yeah. I've got bullet points for it. You got a web page for me? Okay. Sorry about the miscue. You know this thing. This is the Henry Engineering Sportscaster. It's a one rack unit box that does some pretty, pretty cool stuff. Let me tell you about it a little bit. The Sportscaster is an audio control system for managing the audio part of a sporting event radio or video broadcast. Of course, if it's radio, you're pretty much handling the whole thing. But on a video broadcast, you need to have that good audio. You need to mix the mics together, the play-by-play person, the color person, any other commentators, a field person. And then you need to have a producer, if you have a producer, calling the shots and making sure the field person has something to say, or saying if they do, hey, can you interview the coach now? And you need intercom amongst all these different people. Well, the Henry Engineering Sportscaster does exactly that. It has all these functions built into it, especially when you add the sports pods for the announcer, the color, the spotter, these people that are doing those jobs. And then you can add headphones and mics for the camera operator and the field reporter. Plus, it's got an input for a crowd mic, even an input for the remote PA announcer, if you want to put the PA announcer on the air to get those official announcements on the air. So it has a talent headphone audio distribution, talkback intercom mic for the producer, duplex intercom between the producer and the talent. Yeah, they can talk to each other. The talent can even talk to the producer and not go on the air. It's got producer headphone audio mixing, headphone mix for the field reporter and the camera operators, field reporter headphone output. You kind of get the idea. It's got all these features that you need, and you might normally have a full audio console and an intercom system and to get all these things to work. Well, the Henry Sportscaster does this in literally one control box. And then you get some cool functions for the announcers if you get the sports pods for them. So the broadcast team includes the producer, play-by-play announcers, the field reporter, camera operators. All of them wear headphones to monitor the broadcast and to hear the producer's cues via the intercom. The announcers call the game using sports pods, and a field reporter can also be mixed in, as well as that crowd mic and the PA announcer. This program mix is what the audience hears on your webcast or on your radio broadcast or on your cable television broadcast. There's two-way between the producer and the announcers, between the producer and the field reporter. Just an amazing array of the things that you need to get this done. There's almost too much to talk about in a couple of minutes of an ad here. Of course, it's all professional-level audio, so you've got all your XLR mic inputs, your XLR balanced line outputs. You've got it's all the controls that you need here in this literal one rack unit box. Lots of options for monitoring in the left, center, or right earpiece, if whatever your talent is most comfortable with. So check this thing out. You go to henryeng.com, henryeng.com/sportscaster. Henryeng, that's short for henryengineering.com/sportscaster. And where do you find out more about this box? Well, at the Henry site, but also at Broadcaster's General Store. They'll get you a quote and they'll tell you all about it. And the way to get in touch with Broadcaster General Store, well, that's easy. You go to bgs.cc on the web, bgs.cc, or you give them a call at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. And talk to anybody at BGS about the Henry Sportscaster. Really an amazing box. And hey, if I were still doing sports broadcasts, that's what I would bring out to the field. It'll all fit in a small suitcase and get you all set up. So check it out. Thanks a lot to Henry, Hank Landsberg, and also to Broadcaster General Store for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris, I came across a deal I just couldn't pass up. I don't have any much in terms of smart devices at my house. I'm still just trying to learn how to get Alexa to tell me the weather forecast. And these were on sale. I have four of these Wi-Fi controlled outlets for, I think, about $28, maybe $30. So they were pretty cheap each, like $7.50 a piece. And before I went on my trip to Mississippi, I got them all working and got the little app working. And you can tie these into if this, then that. And you can also tie these into your Amazon Echo. And I may be into Google Home. But I'm thinking, what would be a good use for these around a broadcast center? Now, one of these I programmed, you can program these with a schedule. So a couple of lights in the house I programmed to come on at dusk and go back off at dawn in obscure parts of the house that were not around much. So anyway, they do that. But I can remote control them. And I'm part owner, me and my wife own a cabin in Gatlinburg. And there's a couple things where I'd probably like to put on this to maybe reboot them or turn them on and off if there's nobody at the cabin. Chris, what use might this have for remote control at a broadcast facility if you haven't bought, some real professional power outlet strip? What do you think?
Good question. I'm trying to think how I could put that to use. Well, I guess it's just, if it's just for basic monitoring current and voltages, that's like a handy doodad. But I don't know. Well, I gotta give that some thought. That's convenient.
You can put things on a schedule. You can, of course, there's an app. You can turn things on and off, or you can tell She Who Will Not Be Named to turn that on and off. You can put them in groups, right?
Right.
I'm thinking if, some people want to have a reset a resettable power strip. And sometimes those are on wired Ethernet, and sometimes they could be on Wi-Fi, but some of those are pretty expensive. And my little stations at the moment probably couldn't afford that. But we could afford these. These are, you know, $7.50 a piece when purchased in four. Let's see. Let me take my glasses off and look and see how much current this was supposed to handle. Ah, 15 amps. You know, the little relay doesn't sound like 15 amps, but it's supposed to be rated at 15 amps. So if, let's say I had something that was troublesome and rebooting it fixed it. Resetting the power fixed it. Well,
I see that application. Yes,
you could do that. I've got a camera at the cabin. It's a security camera that monitors a part of the cabin that is for the owners only. And I'm always a little curious to see, hey, did somebody run off with the Hennessy? doesn't seem to be as much Maker's Mark in there as there was last time. So I've got a camera in there, but the camera last time, after we left a few days later, it locked up. Well, and the darn power's been too reliable at the cabin, so it hadn't naturally rebooted. So I thought if I got one of these, maybe I can reboot that camera and make it fly again.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
They're so cheap. They're so cheap. $7.50 a piece.
I like that.
Well,
yeah, I can find one for it.
So I've got a saga about an STL. I don't know if I want to bore everybody with it. I'll tell you the detail. I'll tell you a few highlights, and if you want to know about any details, just ask. So we've got this radio station in Greenwood, Mississippi. There's Greenville, Mississippi, and there's Greenwood, Mississippi. And we got our first FM there about 2 years ago. And it's licensed to a little tiny community called Moorhead, Mississippi. And the tower is actually in a little town called Itabena, Mississippi. That's two words, Itta and Bena. Itabena, Mississippi. And the tower is quite conveniently located at the head end for a wireless ISP. Isn't that cool?
Nice.
Talk about internet. There's level three fiber goes right there. So our internet at the transmitter side is usually quite on. Okay. The wireless ISP is called Mobilecom. They cover a huge area of central Mississippi, and they're great. I mean, it's kind of run on a shoestring, but, you know, they do a good – it's a darn good shoestring. It's a good job. In fact, the guy that runs the place, his first name is Bobby, so we affectionately call the service BobbyNet. So it works. Nice. And, in fact, in our transmitter building there, we get like about 100 meg down and 20 megs up. So, you know, we're just fine. And it's real reliable. And we have a fixed IP address and we trade out for some spots and we're all golden. However, the studio is a different matter. It's 9 miles by air from the transmitter to the back to the studio. The studio's in downtown Greenwood, Mississippi, which is a historic little downtown. In fact, we're in a building that kind of looks like a New Orleans style. Architecture building with the fancy wrought iron balcony, right? It sounds nicer than it is, but anyway, well, it's a historic building, and our studio's on the first floor, and we wanted to run just a standard 950 megahertz STL to the transmitter site when we built the station 2 years ago. Well, we were having trouble getting the 950 done. At first we thought we'd just bolt. We had a custom little side of the building mounted tower made, by a local welder. And it's similar to the ones we made in American Samoa that worked really well. Had that made and discovered that the brick on the side of the building was, historic, let's say. And not worthy of being bolted into at all. So the side, even we had done that in Samoa, we just bolted our stuff to the side of these buildings and off we went. It's great, but not on a historic building. Couldn't do that. So we had to get on the air. And so real quick, I borrowed from a couple other of our stations, a couple of Telos Zip 1 codecs and, hooked them up. And by the way, at first we tried a different brand of codec that we had laying around. We had some extra ones. Let's just say they're really, really inexpensive ones. Could not make them work. Talked to tech support all day long and they were so nice and still couldn't make it work. We just had, by the way, at the studio, one ISP, and at the transmitter site, the really good ISP. And the only ISP available at the studio site, is well known in the area and not well liked in the area at all. So it's the local cable provider, and they're down a lot. And so it turns out every packet that we send from the studio, the transmitter has to go to Atlanta first. So, you know, it's two states away, it then comes back. Well, so we ended up putting a Zip One system in, and given about a second of buffering at the transmitter site, it actually works. And you know what? It works great. Works really well, except for when there's no internet at the studio. That's the local cable provider. And we've been off in one case all day long because some water got in one of their coaxes, apparently. So we really wanted to get the 950 link going. I'll try to make this short. Because local labor is a little bit difficult to find, and not everybody is as motivated as, say, people like you and me, Chris. And because I hadn't been there in a long time, nobody ever put the non-penetrating roof mount on the roof. So we could put this non-pen roof mount up on the roof, you know, put some rubber mats down and the concrete blocks and the roof mount and all that. Finally, it got done. We got the STL antenna put up. Really sad story in that we somehow, well, I know how it happened. The non-penetrating roof mount got put way in the middle of the roof and not over at the corner that I thought it was going to be. And so our coax turned out to be about 20 feet too short. So we're still not on the air with the 950 because we have 20 feet of air gap in the coax to the 950. We've got the STL transmitter. We've got the receiver and the coax and the dish at the transmitter site. But
no, just get the LMR 600, extend it. You should be good.
Well, actually, it's actually LMR 400 going partway to the antenna. And yeah, we're gonna get. Some, I think we're gonna get some half. We got a half inch going most of the way. We're gonna just get make some more half inch. Well, couldn't do it while I was there. Had to leave. Well, anyway, we're still on the IPSTL, which I posted this on Facebook and said, and of course. There are a lot of helpful people on Facebook, right? Everybody has an idea. Well, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do that? Why don't you ask a neighbor in one of the taller buildings, you know, if you can use their place? You know, all great ideas. And I had about 6 hours in town there to get this done. And anyway, it was, let's just say it was frustrating. The station needs a full-time engineer and can't afford one. And I'm a 7-hour drive away. In retrospect, I got to say, this is a real testament to how really good audio over IP, even over the public internet, can work. And yes, it hasn't been 100% reliable, but when it's been down, it's only been because everything else in the building has been down too. No email, no FTP, no web browsing. But as soon as the internet works, bam, we're golden. It actually works very well. So that's my story. I wondered if you had any thoughts on that. Not thoughts about how else we could have done it so much because, yeah, there's other options and all of them took more time, more money, and were more complicated than what we're actually doing right now.
No, it sounds like you took the best approach. I mean, you know, it's not easy to do when you don't have somebody on site. So you only have 7 hours. You got to do things, you know, accordingly. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can get away with on the public internet. And what you did makes sense. And, you know, that's something I probably would have done as well. So it's not actually, I could tell you that. 4 years ago? No, 5 years ago. I got called to help an emergency problem with a very large Department of Commerce group to help them relocate their transmitter for things. And they had no way of connecting back to their main source of the reporting, you know, that they needed to do. And my buddy's like, look, I don't know what to do with these guys, how to help them, but we're relocating them to another building here in the city, and there's no way they're going to get their phone circuits in for at least another, we're not sure if it's going to be a month or two because of what they need and how they do it. Like, okay, I got an idea. So it just so happens they were putting their transmitter and antenna in a building, so happens where my transmitter is, and that building, that the floor they were on happened to be the location of three ISPs, which was their points of presence. So we were able to get a connection. Internet connection there. Very, very nice. So back at their facility, they plugged in. I got them to a pair of audio codecs, IP codecs, and we put it online, put it together, let it run for a weekend so they can hear it, evaluate it, make sure everything's good. So audio went in the direction of the transmitter, and then I looped back an off-air signal back down to their studio location so that they could hear that's there. Gave them the access to the GUI browser for both ends so they can see all the what was going on. And I, you know, increased the buffer size to a very large amount so that any issues on the network connection, and hopefully would be masked, and it worked. So they went for the weekend, and a few days. They loved it. They said, this is perfect. We're going to go with it. And I didn't hear back from anybody for a while. And then I heard that they were using it. I was like, oh, great. And I thought that they had gotten their phone circuits in. 6 months later, I get a call. Hey, this is great. We just got the circuits up and running. Things are happening. And we're grateful for your help. And thank you very much for making this happen. And we can't believe that it actually works. This technology is cool. Can we use it elsewhere in our organization? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I wound up putting a proposal together for them, and I think they went ahead and did some stuff. So it's pretty cool. The small company group, needed help was National Weather Service. And the transmitter was one of the National Weather Service NOAA transmitters in New York City that needed help. And for 6 months, they were using audio over IP on a public internet to report the necessary weather alerts and everything else that we all use. Nobody was the wiser, and it was working.
Sure.
So
sure.
Planning, understanding what you're trying to do, you can make it work. If you just plug it in and walk away, you probably will fail. So it goes back to what I said originally.
Yeah.
You know, jack of all trades, understand everything, learn, know the parts in and out. Don't just assume because I bought brand X or Y or A, it'll work because it's a plug and play. There is no plug and play when it comes to this stuff. As much as some manufacturers will tell you, it's not true. If you're internally, you know, in your facility or on your private WAN within your corporation, yeah, you probably get away with the plug and play. I mean, I worked at CBS. We did a lot of funny things testing equipment, plugged in one in New York, plugged the other in Chicago. Hey, it works great. Oh, but it's on our internal WAN.
Yeah, it's on our WAN.
It's work great.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's got priority packets, everything. Now let's switch over to the public side of things. Whoa, there you go. That failed. That video didn't work.
So yeah. Different story.
You know, but these are things you have to walk it through, you know, walk through it, learn it, understand it. It's just, it's the same as if you're going to use a computer to say you're doing Skype, say you're doing vMix Call, or you're doing Lucy or any of these other software based audio sources that you want to do, PC Connect. What's the other one? IPDTL, all of these guys.
Yeah.
Whatever computer you're using for this mechanism to run the software, turn off all the automatic features if it's a Windows-based machine or even if it's an Apple product. Turn off everything that's automatic. Turn off applications that don't need to be running. Scale it. Make sure that box is doing one thing only, your application. Don't assume everything. You know how many times I've done talk show stuff with people? They want to do work with us, and we have a guest here in the studio, and they go, yeah, just call this IP address and connect, and then I'm hearing a Windows sound effect. I'm like,
oh, gee. Oh.
What are you doing? I said, yeah. And then, we're having problems with the computer. It doesn't always work. I'm like, yeah, because you're probably not paying attention to what it should be doing. Like, make sure the Ethernet connection that computer is on, is it on a dedicated segment of the LAN that's traffic is minimal or is traffic is managed? Or are you just throwing it on the business network? I can't tell you how many times I've worked with folks who I'm like, oh, we don't do it because of X. Really? So you're spending $10 a minute with ISDN because you can't get the computer to work, or your IP codec because you don't understand? I'm not kidding. I've worked with some folks. They call me up. Oh, do you have ISDN in your studio? We got a guy who's going to be in town. We need to do this thing. I'm like, I also have two different codecs we could talk with if you want. Those things never work right. Right.
Oh,
okay.
No, they can work really, really well.
Here's what I charge for the studio, and here's what we charge for the ISDN connection. How's that? Great. We'll do it. All right.
Oh,
fair enough.
Wow.
But that's just to the point of jack of all trade is one thing, understanding enough to be able to have a conversation. I am not an HVAC expert, but I can talk enough with an AC tech and say, look, here's my problem. Here's what I'm noticing. The compressor froze up. I'm assuming X, Y, and Z is happening. It's the middle of the winter. I don't have an economizer set up. Is that where we need another system set up? And he's like, yep, absolutely. You got it right. You did the right thing by shutting down. Learn that stuff, the basics. You don't have to be able to pressurize a compressor system or understand that. But if you're in a building, say you're in a city where your air conditioning is chilled water or condenser water, do you know the difference between the two? If you don't, look it up. Yeah. It's important. Okay. I have condenser water at my transmitter site. My neighbors on the same floor I'm in have chilled water. There's two different systems, two different needs, two different ways to maintain it, two different impacts. And the maintenance cost is different too. These are things you need to understand. You don't have to know, you don't have to be certified in it, but just know the differences. So when you notice a change in your air conditioning, your cooling, like what's going on here? just like, as Jeff Weldon always says, and he says this every nug every year, and he says it when he does any SBE stuff or works with us on Twirt, understand the delta between the air in, air out on your transmitter. You can't have cooling if the air going in is the same air coming out, or the temperature of the RF pallets. You know, if you look in the old days, Harris and Gates, Harris, Gates, Continental, and BE manuals back in the binder days when you had binders, I believe there used to be a section that used to tell you that it had to be at least a 20 degree difference of air going into the tube and coming out. And that's how you used to always measure stack temperature. Remember, that was the big thing? Measure your stack temperature and look at the room temperature and go, oh my goodness, it's 90 degrees in the room. It's 110 out of my transmitter. I'm going to have a problem.
Yeah.
These are simple, basic little principles that takes time. Once you understand it, you put it in place. And these are the things to think about. And I just don't get it when you walk into a room and three UPSs are not being used, but you got all your emission critical equipment in an outlet that can go offline because, you know, I'm kind of calling with a plug, a heater in here. Is that okay? Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Boop. We're in the dark. What happened? I only said because it happened about 2 weeks ago.
It's, you know, it almost sounds like the theme of this show has been know what you're doing, you know?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, hey, I'm telling you, your experience with that two different codecs trying to go across the network and the results of the two different experiences, is it because of poor quality? No. Is it because of the internet quality being poor? Maybe not, because maybe they're meeting the specifications for the network distribution. Maybe the terms of service or the agreements they have with customers for retail business are actually being met. Remember those days back when you had a T1 or ISDN, or, you know, what was acceptable bit error rate on, or a T-bird when you did the
bit
on the T1? And you look at it like, well, I got 12 slip bits. Well, that's okay. It's within the bell core spec. Oh. But our equipment sometimes is more sensitive to, say, other T1 equipment that's data that does, you know, resends. These are things to understand and learn and just realize why something's going wrong. So what you experience with the codecs and the two different things could very well be that one's manufactured to be more robust because it's expecting, you know, issues on the network, not because it's a bad thing. It's just because that's the specification that's being used.
And actually, I think that
how many of you have used an Intraplex shelf, you know, or the back in the days of the 163s and the 156s, where your T1 is hiccuping and you're like, well, the box is going berserk. I'm like, yeah, but the phone company can't see a thing because their spec, their window, it's within it. But our boxes are more sensitive to changes in AMI or BHCS. It's simple stuff. I mean, I'm not saying it's simple, but learn it. That's all. Just learn it. And you'll be much happier when you know you can sleep through the night and the weekends and not have to get the phone call.
I think on that inexpensive codec, what we really came to determine was that particular codec was really designed to work in a LAN environment or a controlled WAN. It really wasn't designed for the public internet. And it turned out that, you know, being the two different providers that we were on, even though we're only 9 miles apart, every packet went all the way to Atlanta and back to Mississippi. And it just wasn't prepared for that much. Even though we had buffering cranked all the way up, it just wasn't prepared for that much jitter and some packet loss. And when I look at the Telos Zip 1, oh, there's packet loss. But we're using the AAC codec that has packet loss concealment. And it isn't perfect, but it keeps playing audio. It doesn't just obviously junk out. And you know, once in a while, we've come across this meme of good judgment comes from experience. And experience, well, that comes from poor judgment.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, we got a couple of quick tips coming up, but we're going to hear from our friends at Lavo. It's Kirk Harnack and Chris Tobin on This Week in Radio Tech number 445. We'll be right back. Hang on.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
Thanks a lot, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And do go to lavo.com/twert. It'll take you right to the radio stuff. And we'll let Lavo know that you came there because you heard it here. All right, Chris Tobin, maybe you've got a quick tip for us. I've got just a tiny quick tip, and it really was driven home last week. And not that I could fix everything about it, but your cable management of your AC power cords for equipment in a rack is just as important as your cable management for your audio cables and your network cables too. It's so easy to just let, you know, plug in a power cable and let it dangle, or take a quick cable tie and tie it up somewhere. And some people want to leave a service loop length in their power cable so they could pull a piece of gear out from the front and work on it a little bit. Other people just, you know, pull them tight, or at least so there's no room for a service loop. I don't have an opinion one way or the other on that. I do like that you can buy short power cables and not have all that extra wrapped up in there. And that's something I really need to do, is order a whole bunch of those shorter power cables, different lengths, you know, some 1, 2, 3, 4 foot lengths, and put these cables, even the different color ones, so you can help easily. Oh yeah, that one goes over there. Oh, that one goes over there. And then you can get them plugged into the correct power strip. Some things are on UPS, some things are not, and you know, whichever is important, which needs to be. And power cable management can be pretty important. Chris, I'm just waiting for when we finally come up with wireless power cords. That's what I want. It'll make it all a whole lot easier.
That would be nice. Yes. Well, my tip would be along the lines of cable management in some sense. Recently this week, we had a need to move a Shure mixer we have that we're using for a temporary intercom in one of our studios to be moved to use as a headphone amp in an emergency, not emergency, but last minute change of monitoring for a studio session we're doing recording. And what I practice with all the equipment we have here at the facility is I don't pull all the cables out. So if you could picture a Shure mixer, a little 5-input mixer on the tabletop, and in the back of it, there are three connections, right? Three XLRs, that is, and a power cord. All I did was unplug them, leave the power cord in place, took the mixer to the other room, went to the shop, and on the wall I have hanging XLR cables, mini plugs, and IEC cables, power cords. Grabbed the power cord, went into the performance studio, plugged in, did everything we had to do. And then when I was done, I left everything there except the mixer, unplugged it, physically just the mixer, no cables on it, back to the studio we needed for the intercom, plugged it in, and within 3 minutes, they were back up and running with an intercom that afternoon. So the tip I'm talking about is keep spare cables in the shop, office, wherever it is, whatever you have, you know, so that when you have to move stuff around, you don't have to pull it out of the rack. You pull the equipment out of the rack, but the cables can stay there, because down the hall, wherever you have it, you have another set of cables you can temporarily use with that device where you're moving it to. So think ahead, rather than, because I've worked with folks where they pull stuff out. It's like, all right, I got the computer, now pull out the power cord and pull out the cable. I'm like, don't you have another power cord somewhere? Maybe. Well, let's plan ahead. Let's have them available so we know they're there. Trust me, it will save you time and grief when you go back to the place and go, where'd the cable go? Oh, I forgot the. Oh, I lost. Oh, yeah. You know, somebody else. Yeah. How many times has that happened? And I know many of them.
Too many.
Going,
too many.
You know, that happened just to me last week. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Plan ahead and it'll make it much easier for you to strategize as to how to keep things going. Because remember, the folks who don't do technology, which are your content creators, they look at you, and when you're scurrying about like a, you know, a raccoon in a race, they figure something's wrong. They get panicky. They lose confidence. Okay. You need a confidence builder, which is you walk into the control room, the producer's panicking. What are we going to do? You say, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a cup of coffee. I'm going to flip this switch. I'm going to move this over here and you should be good to go. And they're like, whoa. And you do it. I label stuff on the console for the three different shows that use the studio, and they have, we have three different booths that have to integrate for intercom and feedback, talk back. And they're like, I don't know what's going on. I can't get so-and-so to hear so-and-so. And the artist, I'm like, hang on a second. Hang on. They look at me. What about it? I get my coffee. I get my coffee cup. I do a little drama. Let's have some fun. I walk up to the console. I look at the button selector. And I said, you see that button there? What does it say? And they tell me the name of the show. I'm like, when you press it, it lights up. Yeah. Good. Press it. And then the guy in the studio goes, yep, I can hear so-and-so. There you go. That's it. That's all we got to do. I walk out. Two things happen. One, they don't call in a panic anymore because they know that it's probably something they can take care of because I've made sure it's available for them to see it. And two, if they do call, they make sure they – I actually got a call later in the week from the same group of people. They said, look, I know this time it's definitely not a simple button. And I said, yeah, you're right. They're in the wrong studio. Oh. That's it. But – but the thing is, you got to plan ahead so that people around you don't start going crazy. So you can still look like, and you should be, you're confident what you do. You get the job done. And they know when they come to you that you're not going to simply say, no, can't be done. Or, oh, yeah, you got to talk to the engineer down the hall. But I wouldn't go down there to the cave because the last time somebody went down there, they never came back. So I don't know what to tell you. You don't want you want them to see you in the lobby when you come in and go, hey, Bob, how's it going? It's going good. You know, we got this session today with so-and-so, or we got a sportscaster coming in, or a retired ball player. Great. Let's hit. Check it out. I mean, you know, check in on them. Check on people. See, make sure things are working. Don't take the attitude that, you know, you got it all together, because you don't. Because at the end of the day, who's making the money? Not you. The content creators are. So you want to contribute to the, you want to contribute to that revenue stream. You don't want to be an impediment.
And as an engineer, you want to be approachable. You don't want to be that guy that yells at, you know, at you and makes you feel stupid. Be approachable.
I did witness.
Hey,
that.
We got to go.
A couple weeks ago.
we got to run. Got to run. Hey, thanks so much, everybody, for being here. I'm getting phone calls. We got to stop that nonsense. All right. Hey, thanks a lot to Chris Tobin, my co-host, for being so sharp with full of stories and anecdotes and good advice. I want to thank Suncast for working through some difficulties early in the show and with aplomb. And keeping us on track. So thanks a lot, Suncast, for producing This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find lots of exciting, good podcasts on a number of different subjects. So check it out, especially What the Tech. You're going to like that one, too. Next week, we've got Stephen Kurtz from Dallas, Texas. He's going to be with us. He is the wonderful, perfect blend of an IT expert and a radio broadcast expert. Former engineer, I believe, for Clear Channel, iHeart, and now he does his own IT consulting firm, and it's going to be a good interview. We're going to learn a lot. I'm going to be quiet and just listen. All right. Hey, we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.
All right. If you want to just smile in the camera real pretty for me.
In any way to work me and Chris in a double shot, or can that not squeeze together?
It's difficult to do.
Oh, sure. Sure. Okay. Well, do me. Pretty small.
Let me save this. Sync. All right.
So, okay.
Fun story here. I don't know if you guys were aware of that silicone plant in Wisconsin that blew up.
No,
I heard about it.
Yeah, so there was a silicone company that had their building explode. They don't know the cause of it yet, but my uncle has a IT company, and they're one of his clients. And so he's on vacation, and he gets a call from his client saying that his building blew up. So he's got to cut his vacation short and run out there and start fixing stuff. And so the other day, he's on the phone to Comcast saying, hey, we need new equipment and new lines and new everything. And Comcast is like, oh, yeah, just take your equipment and move it over. And he's like, I can't do that. No. Like, what do you mean you can't do that? The building exploded. Oh, okay. Well, just move it over here. No, you don't understand. There is no building. And they're like, oh, there's no building? And it's like, yeah.
Which part of explosion?
It exploded.
You know, I got to tell you, on the one hand, a lot of Comcast services work really well. On the other hand,